We've all seen the memes and the signs. I love it. I know there's books on it and it's brilliant. And that is, leadership is lonely. You know, the whole at the top thing, all that is true. So are the tropes and memes around leaders eat last, which I agree with. We sacrifice first, which I agree with. And you always get blamed, which I experience. It's not to create a jaded shell by any means, but I do think what I've learned very quickly in my role here is that those weren't jokes and people being funny. Those were truths that we have to learn to navigate. And so out of that, what I would advise anybody is, number one, take a job. No matter what circumstance you're in, it is going to be worth it. And build yourself a support community. I've been fortunate enough to be able to build up some mastermind groups around me. I've got now 20 and 30 year colleagues that I can call up who've had comparable paths. And we're always talking about how we're navigating and how we feel.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story, and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Mike Moss, president of the Society for College and University Planning, or SCUP. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Mike, tell us about SCUP.
So SCUP is a 501c3 professional association. And I think that's an important distinction because the professionals that belong to our association are involved in higher education and for-profit support and adjacent industries too. The planning industry of higher education. And so we are an individual professional society, and we are a learning-centric association that is an inclusive community of practice around the integrated planning approach. That is what we do.
So, Mike, let's unpack this a little bit. What is integrated planning in a university setting? I've not heard this before.
It's a great question because we all plan. Some of us are episodic planners, but all of us plan.
Right.
Whether you want to admit it or not, you're a planner. And so most of us in both the association field as well as those we serve are very attuned to sequenced and time-based strategic planning. And it's super important, but that's not what integrated planning is. It happens first. So you have plan development, you have the artifact of a strategic direction, which is your strategic plan. And then integrated planning is what brings the alignment of your institution or your association together to execute that strategic plan. Because most importantly, none of us want a SPOTS document, right? Strategic planning on the shelf. It happens, it's real. But with the integrated planning approach, which is really an enculturation of planning into the disciplines of your operation, you will keep your strategic plan active. And sometimes you'll have to recalibrate it. Sometimes you might have to adjust it because things happen. But you're always working your plan and in alignment, both horizontally across your organization and vertically to the direction of the changes that your plan outlines. So that's what integrated planning is for.
So who are your members?
On the academic university college side, we have everything from academic planners, presidents and provosts, so some of the senior leadership in the administration. Also, we have people within the departmental structure. So we have a lot of associate VPs of some stuff, and that could be in any of the disciplines, but they are in charge of implementing the academic plan or implementing the campus master plan, which is facilities. And so there's a lot of different annual planning paradigms that go on campus. And so we have a lot of that representation. And then on the for-profit side, we have a lot of that campus master planning adjacent community, which is architects, design build, construction, but also the consultants who help activate people's strategic plans through this integrated planning approach.
So Mike, do most of your members have planning as their primary job, or is planning something that they think about in order to do another job?
That is the perfect question. Very few of them have planning in their title.
Ah.
very few of them actually have planning as even an 80% full-time obligation. But they are in charge of, regardless of title, they are in charge of the activation and implementation of plans. So they are doing planning constantly. But it is not necessarily a planning job as we would define somebody who has that in their title.
So how do they find you and decide to become a member of an association that maybe isn't reflective of their primary job, being a provost, being head of the foreign language department or head of facilities?
I'll be very candid. I think we are unfortunately still a little bit of a secret. We definitely benefit from a community that is very supportive and brings their next wave of professionals with them. So many, many of our current members were brought by the last set of 20-year members who are also then therefore from the first set of 20 members. And so there is growth in that, but it's probably not the ideal state for brand awareness. But I do think what happens is when people end up in a challenging moment in their planning, we do tend to get found pretty quickly from people talking to consultancies. We are a resource for them, the consultants themselves. We are also resources on search for a lot of the things that you would imagine that come up quickly in a search return for a university planning issue. It's a great question because I think we are successful with a community that supports us by word of mouth and activity, and that we would aspire to really, let's make this a mass adoption of integrated planning is really what we're looking to do over the next 5 years.
Well, Mike, it's clear we got a lot to talk about, but before we do that, how did you get to become president of SCUP?
So in 1991, I graduated from Indiana University with a Bachelor's of Science in Environmental Science and Public Policy.
Oh.
I then, as one did back and even now, I became a bartender to try and figure out where the heck I was going to get a job. So while I was bartending back then, I did not have a computer or internet access or all that. So I was looking in the want ads and I found an ad for an executive secretary of a nonprofit that was involved in water quality for the Saginaw Bay in Michigan. That was basically the description. There was an address. I sent in my resume. Lo and behold, it turns out to be a Department of Natural Resources funded association of 22 counties addressing the water quality and zebra mussel challenge of the Saginaw Bay watershed. And I became their first employee. And it was my first board meeting of one of my first days. I found out that we needed to apply to the IRS for a nonprofit status.
Oh.
So off I went. My job was in a trailer, a temporary trailer at a university in mid-Michigan. And I walked across the campus to the library, asked for help, and off we went. And we filed and were accepted as a C3 and formed up the association and off we went.
So you got lucky. You got introduced really early to associations and nonprofits.
And it's one of those things where I hope and hope and hope that it's changed, that when I was coming out with my degree, no one in the career counseling offices had ever made me aware of nonprofits or associations as a career path potential. And so I literally did fall into it. But I'm hopeful that that's obviously changed a lot in the last three and a half decades, that people have been able to bring forward the wonderful work the association industry does so that it's not an accidental discovery. It's an intentional path.
So how long have you been at SCUP and how long have you been CEO or president?
I've been here 11 years in the role of president.
Were you a president or a CEO before that?
I was not. Not counting that first job where you're the first employee, therefore you get to be the executive director.
Right, right.
I don't count that. I have been very fortunate in my career to be at the director level and above for the entirety of my run. And so coming into this opportunity at SCUP, I was a chief operating officer for a couple of associations. And so very involved in strategy implementation, obviously very involved in operational development and governance, but not as a CEO or president. This is my first presidential assignment.
What do you think is fundamentally different about the chief staff exec job that you think people should know?
We've all seen the memes and the signs. I love it. I know there's books on it and it's brilliant. And that is, leadership is lonely. You know, the whole at the top thing, all that is true. So are the tropes and memes around leaders eat last, which I agree with. We sacrifice first, which I agree with. And you always get blamed, which I experience.
Yes.
It's not to create a jaded shell by any means, but I do think what I've learned very quickly in my role here is that those weren't jokes and people being funny. Those were truths that we have to learn to navigate. And so out of that, what I would advise anybody is, number one, take the job. No matter what circumstance you're in, it is going to be worth it. and build yourself a support community. I've been fortunate enough to be able to build up some mastermind groups around me. I've got now 20 and 30 year colleagues that I can call up who've had comparable paths. And we're always talking about how we're navigating and how we feel. So you got to have that safe space because you can't hold that obligation to your team or your board. They have a duty of care for you differently. Sometimes I just need that safe space. So take the job and create a space where you can be your full self and a group of people who are being their full self so that you can process and work through the complications that just come from being the one that has the name on the door that has to sign the checks that holds the accountability. There are things that come with that that you need to be able to talk out with folks.
Well, that is excellent advice. Let's turn to SCUP. You have a new strategic plan that you finalized in 2024. I want to hear about it because during the prep, you talked about how this is a new mission after 59 years. Tell us about it.
Appropriately so. SCUP, for a very long time, had a mission that was refined with each plan because you only need a strategic plan if you're driving change, right? So obviously things have to evolve. So refinement was the rule. And there, it was great. It was doing great. And it was written primarily to develop and support this approach in integrated planning. So supporting the discipline and those who aspire to be in the discipline. Where we are coming out of the pandemic, we have an opportunity to think differently because we all got challenged to be different, to manage our lives, our individual families, and our businesses differently. And we recognize that a community of practice, while not innovative at all, was actually what we always aspired to do, but we'd never said it out loud. And so we had input from 1,000 members. We had basically 20, 25% of our members at the time give us an opinion and a voice in the planning process in 2023. So we launched in 24 with that learning-centric association by design and being a community of practice by design. That's the mission of being a peer-supported planning discipline. That is what integrated planning is. So that was the big shift in mission, which came then with a very simple set of values to support it, which were community, learning, impact, in that order.
So for someone like me who's not as attuned to these kind of nuances and power of language, how is becoming a community of practice fundamentally different from what you were doing before?
We were structured in a learning environment that was effective. I want to definitely honor how we got to where we are. That is the platform that can get us to where we're going to be. So we were structured in a very effective learning that was Sage on Stage oriented. It was expert driven.
Ah, okay.
It was driven by a set of subject matter experts, which we still have for obviously very important reasons, but the leadership of the conversation, the leadership of the emerging discipline was very expert driven. And then what we realized is that was great, but what was going to get us to really true mass adoption and acceptance of this discipline is the practice to activate your strategic plans was that it needed to be peer-to-peer driven. Expert shepherd, maybe we have to do some facilitation at that expert level, but really it's a peer-to-peer practice. It is not an expert driven. So if you don't have someone with 900 credentials on your campus in integrated planning, you don't feel like you can do it. That's not true at all. If you have 900 people who want the campus to improve, you're doing integrated planning. And so we really had to get focused on the intention of the discipline's success, its outcomes, its peer-to-peer, not necessarily expert driven. So then we had to change the structure of SCUP to support that.
So talk to us about the changes. How'd you change the structure?
So like all of us, we had a beautiful set of bylaws. They were awesome. They'd been rewritten in 2012 for some governance practice changes, but it was pretty robust. There was a lot of really good guardrails in that bylaw process. Nothing wrong with it, except it was restrictive to a fluid movement of peer-to-peer involvement. And it also dictated very specifically, these committees shall exist to do these things. Nothing wrong with that at the time, but as we came into this plan, we realized we don't even want those committees anymore. And by the way, neither did the members. That was very clear, right? This wasn't staff-driven, this was community-driven. And so we had to give ourselves a set of bylaws that allowed us to have that agile approach to structure. So we did that and it got a lot smaller. The bylaw in its entirety got smaller.
Ah.
And it gave the board and community permission to work together to define what needed to be done in leadership roles, when it needed to be done, and be sunset when it was done. So it was a much more fluid process of bringing up the expertise, addressing the issues, and then either keep it or fold it, but not within having to now go change another set of bylaws or adjust a policy. It just became much more agile. So with that structure change, we were able to launch a whole new set of committees that brought in a different set of expertise and voices from the community that we didn't really hear from before.
Have you also made changes to the staffing and the departments?
Only through retirement, so through attrition. I had three colleagues representing 45 years of SCUP experience that retired in 2023. They contributed to the development of the plan and then retired. And we had replaced them with people who had 10 to 12 years or less of professional experience to bring in a different perspective for what they expected to do for SCUP. I am all about legacy. I think it's fine. But we also knew that nothing about this new direction was anchored in legacy. And so we had an opportunity to refresh through attrition. But what we did do is all of us had to reskill differently to the learning-centric approach.
Wow. So what has been the impact on programs and services? Like, you've got a conference coming up in July. How do you change the conference to support the new strategic plan, this concept of community learning and impact?
It's a great question. So throughout 24 and leading into the event here in 25, so the first year of the plan, we were real intentional about implementing those new structures, forming the new committees, recruiting the new teams, introducing them through the annual conference of 24, using a lot of community-based input and peer-to-peer designed sessions as opposed to a concurrent with an expert. We still have those, of course, but not as many, right? So experimenting. So the permission of the first year of the plan was to experiment to find where the peer community wanted to work together. Now that we're in year two of that plan, we're building off of that, and the programming reflects that. The programming has a lot more interactive group learning environments than they do concurrence in the traditional structure. Both provide value. So the other thing on the learning side is that we completely experimented. We ran all kinds of different configurations of virtual and in-person learning this year, designed to be small, fast, quick, responsive, and some of them just went unbelievably well. And some of them, we thank them for their time and we'll have to do something different because it didn't work.
Ah.
So the permission of being the peer-to-peer community approach allowed us to have the permission to fail. For SCUP, that was a really big shift in mindset, which was we had all these things we knew wouldn't go poorly. They may not always hit the home run, but they wouldn't go poorly. Now we introduced the permission to sometimes things might go poorly, but learn from it. So that whole learning centricity thing is do, reflect, do differently. And that's the mindset by which we approach all of our work now, whether it's governance or programming.
So Mike, give us an example of something that didn't go quite well or didn't give you the results that you looked for. And then how do you kind of exit gracefully? And how do the members take it? How do you message that?
Yeah, so as one does, right, we put up one of the hot topics. We put up a virtual series, workshop series. How could that possibly go wrong? It's what everybody's talking about. And like 8 people registered. So we lost money on it with the facilitator costs and everything. And so we asked those 8 people why they came, what they got out of it, what they'd like to see different. We also found people who we know had pinged through it so we could talk to them, people who we knew, and say, well, why'd you choose not to?
Yeah.
They're like, because I can do this all the time and I actually can do it for free. And they would give us those examples and we're like, oh. And so then we would just communicate back to the facilitator and those who went through it. Here's where we're moving off of your feedback. We can give them opportunities to participate in the next wave if they want, or, you know, if they're good to go, thank you for participating. So it's just an open invite to continue the experiment with us has been very well received by both the professional experts and facilitators, as well as the attendees. And what it's opened up is everything ends in reflection. So an emerging leader call, for example, ends in reflection. What went well today? What did not? And then we have an opportunity just for that, obviously, the continuous improvement that we all work for. So I think that permission to dialogue on reflection has been a huge change, and that's driving programming changes at the events.
So how is your board responding to this? Like, boards like to see success. So if something isn't successful, maybe loses money, what are they doing? How are they reacting?
In the structure that we have, so I mentioned we redid the governance structure. We're very intentional, as all of us would advocate, is the board strategic. They are working on conversations that are 3+ years out on a rolling basis. Our SCUP Council is the head of the committees and some of the things that we mentioned we made new things out of. They represent in the SCUP Council. Their job is to look current year plus one.
Ah.
And that's where we have more of the operational, this work, this didn't. It's not the board.
Okay.
So then the SCUP Council comes up with recommendations. If they require funding, it goes to the board. If it's within but funded budget year, keep going. So the board is really looking right now, they're looking at 2028 and what the evolution of programming will look like. Our responsibility is to keep them informed so they're not planning against things that did or didn't work. Like, we just need them to plan effectively. but they have to stay on the three-year rolling lens. And the SCUP Council gives us the operational programmatic feedback that we can use to do those workshop adjustments, for example.
I want to ask you about something that also is related to the new focus, and that is your SCUP Exchange, which is your digital platform for collaboration. So talk to us about that.
So again, not innovative, but new for us. We had convened in person effectively for 59 years. Even through the pandemic, our audience supported us. We came out okay, but we did not do okay with virtual. It was just not working for the audience in the way we wanted to support it, and they wanted to be supported. That's changed a lot in the last 2 years, but as it relates to this community of practice, the exchange, in order to be a peer-to-peer supported knowledge community, you got to give them a place to talk. So it's very much your ASAE type online community where people can come in, form groups, discuss, collapse, whatever they want to do. But what's been interesting for us is we weren't sure how to structure it. Do we structure it by the planning type or by institutional type or by professional designation? So we kind of let the peers define how that was going to go. And so we would imagine that large schools would like to talk to other large schools. And while that's true for certain topics, we're finding they like to talk about aspirant institutional markers, as well as comparables, as well as learning from each other that, like, hey, this is safe harbor, no recording, no bots. This is what didn't work. Don't do this. So they have defined kind of how this community of practice is going in the exchange. I think it probably matches many of our colleagues and how they do this. But for us, that was the first positive test that the peer-to-peer was what they said they wanted in the strategic direction. And now they've activated it amongst themselves. They are driving it.
Wow, that's amazing.
There's no committee to oversee the exchange. We do have an engagement committee, but it's got a broader responsibility than just the exchange. So there's no direct supervision of the community. There's a set of things you agree to, and then you go to work.
Yeah, it sounds like it's member-led and member-focused. Wow.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, as part of this plan, during the prep, you talked about how you're changing your membership model. This is always of interest to my listeners. So how are you changing the membership types and the structure?
So to be an effective community of practice, we wholeheartedly believe that we have to be first and foremost focused on access. And I would advocate this, obviously, for any industry I've worked in the past, but specifically for higher education. In order for us to really serve the student outcomes of the future, we have to be aligned and we have to have access to the knowledge bases of more than just one association. As the planning association, we're kind of that connective tissue across all the disciplines. And so if we also have a barrier of entry that's even just at the simplest level, a cost barrier, it's going to keep us from being an effective connective tissue for the campus. So our pilot is simplifying it. So right now, most associations that I work with in the higher ed space, we do a lot of full-time enrollment. So for example, if you're a school of one student, 5,000, you know, et cetera.
Right, right. Your dues are based on the number of full-time students.
Exactly, which is fair.
Very common. We see this in all of our higher ed clients.
Right. All good, right? Well, we're going to just simplify it. And you either can come in as an individual at a much reduced rate than we currently charge, or you can come in as a planning team and we can figure out what that looks like for your school. But there's basically two ways of entry in this pilot. And the pilot went really well. It also, and we learned a lot. And so we're going to the board here in July of 25 to talk more about it and what we're going to recommend for the phase two approach, which will be an implementation, not a pilot, and let people start rolling from the legacy system into the new one over the next year to year and a half. So once that's up and running, we do believe, obviously, we're going to take a revenue loss. We lowered the dues.
Oh.
Significantly.
Significantly. Okay.
So in the absence of, you know, all of a sudden 2X come in at the same rate, which won't happen, we know there's a growth curve here of at least 3 years to get back to where a normal path, a standard path would have taken us. But we are okay with that because at the same time, all the other activations are bringing in the gap. So it's a risk. It's not without risk. But we do believe where we're going at the end of the strategic plan is that it's leadership and partnership. That is really the crux of integrated planning. We have great partners and we want to extend those partnerships beyond just you paid them dues, you're good, come to SCUP. You paid SCUP dues, cool. You have access to their knowledge base. It's giving more access to more communities with lower walls so that the main focus is there's still fee-based services. There has to be a way to support the business. But we really don't think high dues is the future of higher ed. It's access to knowledge bases that are glued together through a planning discipline. So we have to lower the wall first, and that's what we're working on.
And hopefully with this new membership model, membership will just explode. That's the goal, so that more people are really part of the community, but also trained on this concept of integrated planning, which benefits universities.
Yeah. So right now, obviously, it's a metric. It matters. KPI is noses and souls, right? You know, how many members do you have? How does that represent your discipline? But what we really want to get to is, this is how many campuses are actively in use of integrated planning. And that's going to come from more people having access to the planning materials and then associating that with SCUP or their home association. It's all good. As long as you're doing the integrated planning approach, we will know you are, because of how the training and everything goes, that we can really start to say that, you know, 30% of the institutions in this country and in Canada are using this approach to keep the students served. Because at the end of the day, that's the outcome, right? The outcome isn't our budget. The outcome is that the planning is working on campuses and student service. That's why we're here.
So, Mike, what is the outcome that you all are envisioning with this 5-year strategic plan? What will, I guess, the profession and SCUP look like at the end of 5 years?
It will be much more representative of what planning actually looks like on a campus, which is, it includes the episodic planner, meaning somebody who gets told, oh, you're on the planning team for the next 6 months.
Okay.
And those who also intentionally love and do planning. But also it will represent more, I think, experiences from outside the community wall of the campus. The employer community has an association, and they're amazing. By the way, that association is ridiculously great. But we don't all talk about the ecosystem of higher ed effectively well. So at the end of the strategic plan, we want to have opened up that dialogue with the ecosystem of higher ed, not just those who do our discipline in higher ed, and be truly the connective tissue for a campus to move forward for their students.
So I got a question related to something that maybe your members do and less about SCUP. Is there planning around the next pandemic? Is that integrated planning? And is there planning around what higher ed is going to look like given the chaos it's in right now? How are your members involved in that?
They're using the tools that are in front of them, right? And we all have those. It's scenario planning, contingency planning, all things future focused have to have some level of current state. So in scenario planning, you may like, oh, that executive order just hit. I need to plan through how I'm going to execute that when it goes live. You know, there's these things that happen that you have to constantly be building those planning strengths with. Contingency planning can carry out a little bit farther. And all of those are in support of your strategic plan, right? You haven't put that on the shelf yet, but you might have to adjust it. And adjustments can happen constantly as things change in your environment. That does not mean you have a failed plan. It means you're responding. So you have to make adjustments. Sometimes you got to recalibrate your plan because 2 years in, something really great happened and now you can accelerate. So why wait? Right? Calibrate for that. So there's all these movements that are constantly going, and it is very much a flow, but it's future-based, not responsive-based. And so I think that's how people are. So there are people planning for what happens if COVID 2.0 comes. What happens if enrollment drops another 30%? There's all these things that are, but it's in those kind of tools that we all have available to us. It's the activation of the community and conversation and connection. That's what makes it different in integrated planning, is you're not doing it just in your office by yourself, just in case. You're doing it in the community with your peers.
And the more people are in the community, the better the planning.
1,000% better. Infinitely better.
Yeah, yeah. Mike, it's June 2025. Where do you hope to be by the end of the year with the organization and with regard to this plan?
I mentioned our values of community, learning, and impact. At the end of 2025, we would like to have piloted, tested, and launched the community activations that this plan requires, so that in 2026, we are hyper-focused on the learning aspect of what needs to happen to be an integrated planning practice on a campus. And that means we know starting January 1st, 2026, we are coming to you. We're not going to wait for you to be able to come to us. And so that's the 26 activation that comes after we get this community up and running.
We're going to have you back.
I'd love to.
You got a lot going on and I want to hear about it. Boy, this has been an amazing interview. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the conversation and the kindness, and I love your curiosity. So I look forward to talking again for sure.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends.